Good. Well, good morning again. So, you know, we're working through this process of actually what we're doing here every Sunday is trying to shift consciousness from one space to another. And one of the things I was reading last night, just before I went to bed, I can't remember who I was reading, but anyway, it was talking about how, actually Charles Fillmore calls it crystallized race consciousness. So the way we think and look at life right now, our brains are actually wired like that. So this idea of moving from ego to spirit is a matter of really rewiring our brain. And so you say, well, how do I rewire my brain? Well, it's sort of like, you know, as you put your attention to something, as you put attention to that for long enough, the brain begins to rewire itself because it feels that this is what you're interested in now. And it's just, and we are Dr. Joe Dispenza. How many people know who that is? Okay, we had him here twice many years ago. And he actually showed us a film that showed the brain activity, the synapses. And, you know, if you're feeling anger, then your brain actually rewires itself to help you to deal with that, be in that space of anger. And if you move to a space of love, the brain synapses rewire themselves to be in that space of love. I mean, it's phenomenal when you think about it, okay? So these ideas that we're studying, what makes them challenging is that it's forcing us to rewire our brain. I did a thing with the students in class Thursday. You guys know the thing with the nine dots, and you have to connect all nine dots using four lines without. So I always challenge them with that. I put that up there and said about, you know, connecting all nine dots with four lines. You can't take the marker off the board. And they just were staring at it, as they usually do. And this blank look on their face, you know. So finally, Keita gets up, and she goes up. She says, let me try it. And she couldn't get it. And so I said to her, I said, Keita, you have to understand, from the time you got up out of your seat to come up and try this, when you get back to your seat, you're not the same person that you were when you walked in this classroom. You get what I'm saying? Because she gave herself the chance to step out of her comfort zone and try something, even though it was beyond her to try to figure it out. So then another one came up, Raven, and she got up to the board. And as soon as she got up there, I could tell the fear came up in her because she realized when she got up close to it, she couldn't figure out how to do it. So she got very close to the board. So I went up and I took her and I brought her back, and we sat on the first row of tables. And I says, now look at the nine dots in comparison to the whole board. I said, you still might not be able to figure it out, but the best thing you need to do when you have something that's challenging you is step back from it so you can see the whole perspective, and then allow yourself the opportunity to have the guidance percolate up inside of you. You know, so that's sort of the process of what we're doing here, because if you think about it, the way we are right now, we're standing right up to the board. You get me? Of how we are. And so we need to be able to step back from ourselves and look at ourselves in a different perspective. And that's what we're going to talk about a little bit today. So today we're going to talk about wisdom. Wisdom is living intuitively. Wisdom is living intuitively. So how do I live from my intuition? And you think, a lot of you think about intuition as a feminine quality, a female quality. Makes me think we're watching Dragonheart. I mean, people said, well, that's probably not your kind of movie anyway. So the kid goes into the cave to talk to the dragon, and the dragon comes out, and, you know, the dragon is being a dragon, and the kid's talking to it. And so then the dragon speaks, and it's got a female voice. And so the kid goes, oh, you're a girl. And the dragon goes, I'm obviously not a girl. I am female, but I'm not a girl, right? So this idea of intuition is a feminine quality, but we are both masculine and feminine. We have to learn how to operate from both sides of our brains. Does that make sense? Not only operate from both sides of our brains, but we eventually want to integrate the brain where it's acting as a whole. All right? And so that's dynamically what we're trying to get to in this spiritual study. So again, so this week we're exploring the use of the divine idea of wisdom that is innately embedded in the subconscious realm of mind, and it helps us to learn how to live life intuitively. So this is not something where we have to try to gain wisdom. We have wisdom, but we don't understand how to tap into it. So it's like in college, we talk about this, you know, there's a lot of people with PhDs, right? So they have a lot of what? Intellectual knowledge. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they're wise, because there is a movement that has to happen from having the knowledge to being wise. All right, so knowledge and wisdom are not the same thing. Wisdom comes from the living of the knowledge that you have, and whether that living, you begin to develop wisdom. Is that making sense? Okay. So listen to this quote from, this is from truthunity.net. You might want to write that down, truthunity.net. That's where you can go ask a lot of questions about spiritual things to get answers. It says, God created our world in the ideal, but we remake our world through the activity of ideas in our limited consciousness. So we were made whole. We were made, in the image and likeness of wisdom, but we remake our world and to our own image. So divine ideas such as wisdom, power, intelligence, substance, and love are grossly underutilized in our thinking and perceiving. In truth, the real self of each one of us is the embodiment of God, and all of the substance that God is within us, as well as the power to make this substance active. So that's what really this study of the 12 powers or what Jesus was doing by calling these different disciples to him, is he was activating those powers within himself. You know, so he realized that he had to go through that process. Remember, his mother knew it at a very early time, but Jesus had to go through the process of activating within himself. It says, however, in our human consciousness, we only partly realize the power and wisdom that belong to our real self. Therefore, our tendency is to use God's substance by separating it into parts in our thinking instead of using it in its wholeness, and or using it intuitively or using it righteously. So in other words, we're not taking these divine ideas we have, if we take one at a time, we're not using them in their whole sense, but we're dividing them up according to our perceptions and putting them into our own likeness and image. Is that making sense? Okay. So if you talk about the idea, we talked about love, 2 weeks ago. If you think about the idea of love, love just is. Love just is. But we have to break it down to, well, I love this and I don't love that, And so that's not using it in its sense of wholeness. Okay? And it goes on, just one more sentence. It says, we fall short of the perfection which is ours as a son, as a daughter of God, because we remake our world according to our own limited concept rather than according to the divine plan. Okay. So the key here is, how do I live from the divine plan as opposed to my own perception? That takes a rewiring of the brain. Does that make sense? Okay. So, to get into the scripture of how this, the idea of wisdom, in scripture, James, the son of Zebedee, is the disciple of Jesus who represents the faculty of wisdom. And it's also known as, that faculty is also known as judgment and discrimination. And it's written in Mark 1:19-20. When he had gone a little further from there, he saw James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, who were also in the boat mending their nets. And immediately he called them, and they left their father Zebedee in the boat with the servants, and they went after him. So it's almost this idea. Notice, as he called a disciple, they didn't know who really he was. They didn't go, but they didn't say, well, who are you? I can't leave what I'm doing. They just left and followed him. So it's sort of idea, when that calling comes in within us, what we do is we argue with it. We question it. Why are you calling me? You get it? And so scripture shows that these ideas, when you begin to understand them, when you get that calling from within, you immediately begin to follow. So let's explore this idea of using wisdom to live life intuitively. So when we find ourselves in those challenging moments that life has a tendency to confront us with, we have the choice to either worry about it or pray about it. Now, a lot of times when we say, let me pray about it, we're really saying, let me worry about it, okay? But we want to understand the difference between being in a consciousness of worry and a consciousness of prayer. So worry is the domain of the ego self. that aspect of our thinking that doesn't allow us to enter into a prayerful, contemplative, open, and receptive space. So that self of us, you know, we say, well, I really do want to pray about it, but all the stuff that we have a tendency to draw up within ourselves is rambling around, and we really can't get into that space because the ego is not letting us make that shift. Prayer, however, allows us to enter into the domain of intuition, that place in consciousness where divine wisdom becomes available to us. So that's what we're looking to do. It's almost like slipping from the beta state of mind to the alpha, which we do a lot. Many of you are doing it right now. Well, you're hearing me, but you're not hearing me. And I understand that. You get what I'm saying? I understand that process happens. But when we slip into that alpha state, usually it's when we're doing something that's somewhat mindless, we have a tendency to be more available to enter into that prayerful mind state. You get it? Okay. So divine wisdom is the arena within us created by God in the ideal. The arena created by God is this, the real self of each one of us, that is the embodiment of God and contains all of the substance that God is. It is a space in consciousness that helps us to receive wise, divinely guided wisdom. Okay? The key here is, how do I get myself into that space? That's the work we need to do. So divine wisdom is the discerning faculty of righteous judgment that seeks the good of God for everyone involved in your life and affairs. So that's one of the things you begin to think about. You say, what I'm thinking about right now, is it only good for me, or is it good for all that's involved in what's going on right now? That's sort of a heartfelt thing you have to ask yourself. And how do you know whether or not you're in that realm of that spiritual consciousness that, you know, you're looking to be in? Well, if your thinking is self-righteous and judgmental, seeking your own good at the expense of others, and having a strong need to be right by making others wrong, then it might be obvious to you that you're not in a sacred space. So as I was talking to my students, we were talking about this, I said, I want you to understand that none of the things that I'm sharing with you in class are for you to look at where you are as being right or wrong. It's just for you to look at where you are. You hear the difference? Okay? So self-evaluation, say it with me again, self-evaluation without condemnation, okay? So it's trying to understand that space you're in. So when we choose to ponder the thoughts and questions in our mind by way of our own judgmental ego, there's a prevailing tendency to be fearful, critical, and condemning. Oftentimes, we're coming at life from fear. It doesn't seem like it because it's such a normal process that we go through. And again, we're quoting my favorite marketing consultant, Sasha Strauss, who's just a very powerful speaker. He says, we have a tendency to take church and family and, you know, job or organizations, all these things, and we have to take life and we put it through, he calls it, our insecurity filters. Okay? So we're taking all of the things that are happening in our lives, and we have these insecurity filters, and that's what we were running them through. So, of course, if they're going through an insecurity filter, a lot of times the result that comes out is making us feel insecure. But again, it's such a natural process for us that when you say, no, I'm not really insecure. But when you get into a discussion, you can hear it. You know, Dr. Carl Jung says, you listen to a person speak long enough, you can actually begin to know what's going on in their subconscious realm of mind. All right? So that's what we want to be. We want to hear our own language. Anybody ever, after you've had a conversation with somebody, think back on and go, boy, that wasn't what I really wanted to say or do or, you know, or put out there. You ever do? Anybody else do? Or is it just me? Okay. All right. Like, I know when I'm working with students in the classroom, I got to be very careful about how I formulate things because these are 18, 19-year-olds, sometimes 16, 17-year-olds, because we have high school students that are doing co-high school and college. I don't know if you know about that program. So you have to be very careful because that has a tremendous impact on their minds. Right, but we also do, you know, have an impact, great impact on each other. So we have to be very clear about how we're interacting with each other. So, you know, our spiritual work is to do the work. to become open to the divine ideas that are intuitively possible when we put God first. Now, I shared with you a couple of weeks ago that my affirmation that's right on my top of my alarm clock thing there that I read just before I go to bed every night, and part of it says, God is first in my life and is revealing to me the orderly process of my life. See, that's really important to me. God is first in my life and is revealing to me the orderly process of my life. Because you want to know, how does that, don't you ask yourself, what's 2020, what's going to happen in 2020? Okay? And sometimes we run that question through our insecurity filter. All right? But if you truly believe that God is in charge of, in revealing to you the orderly process of your life, then that sort of takes it away. You kind of know that things are going to unfold for the good of you and everybody around you. And so often it's necessary to step away from a challenging situation for a while in order to allow ourselves to rest from the energy generated by what is occurring. And that's what I was saying earlier about moving a student away from the board. Okay. Now, by stepping away for a moment, we can allow ourselves to shift in consciousness from fear to love so that we can hear that gentle, small voice that's trying to give us guidance. Fear, a lot of times, is a lot of noise in our head, all right? How many people, when you're meditating, you can't seem to stop that noise that's going on in your head, all right? And sometimes, you know, I get up and do my meditation, and I go back to bed, and I say, that was a waste of time, all right? Because all I did was, you know, the stuff that woke me up, and I said, well, let me go do my meditation. I didn't do anything but keep, you know, mushing that stuff through my head. I could have stayed in the bed and stayed warm, right? So, you know, that's sort of the thing we're doing is, you know, how do I clear that stuff? One thing I do, we have Debbie here with us today with the singing bowls, is I do a meditation with a singing bowl. It's right in my ears. And that vibration from the bowl a lot of times will shock me, bring me out of that stuff that I'm mushing around in my head. You know what I'm saying? And I can follow the vibration of that singing bowl for a while. But, you know, inevitably what happens, the mush comes back up. Okay, but then I realize it again. I try to put my breathing in tune with that bowl. So it is an exercise you have to go through. And I think I can say without question that the greatest challenge to the peace in our lives, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong, comes from our relationships. Okay? Greater than money or jobs or physical ailments or whatever, even though these challenges also require us to use the divine gift of wisdom and righteous judgment, more than anything else, our relationships are the biggest challenges in our lives. And I don't mean just close relationships. I mean all relationships, you know. And, you know, there seems to be no other challenge to our sense of faith, peace, love, and joy that comes, to, you know, that it's more than trying to manage the emotions that we have when we're dealing with people. I bet you on a day-by-day basis, you can flip back and think, boy, that person got on my nerves. Or that person made me feel real good. You know what I'm saying? We could go through this process all the time of making those evaluations. So this is truly an area where we need to use our head and our heart, our wisdom and our love, where we need to have on our side James, who is wisdom, and John, love, just as Jesus called them and together as brothers. He called Peter and Andrew together because that's faith and strength. And then he called James and John together because that's wisdom and love. So, you know, the idea of calling these together is what helps create the harmony in our lives. So if you even think about the five loaves and two fishes, those fishes were male and female divine ideas. The five loaves were the five senses. When you take a male and female divine idea and insert it into the five senses, it breaks that five sense from being stuck in a certain way of thinking. Did that make sense? Okay. So you always want to use divine ideas, you know, together. So, and it can, when you use them together, it creates what's called an intrinsic balance. Intrinsic meaning of or relating to the essential nature of a thing. So intrinsic or essential to the use of our divine gift of wisdom is a connecting idea of love. And vice versa, intrinsic or essential to the use of our divine gift of love is connecting it with wisdom. We all know that love without wisdom can get us in trouble. Has anybody had that experience in their life? Never, Sam, you were good, right? And so the example given in Scripture to us that emphasizes and explains this concept is in John chapter 8, when the people brought the woman to Jesus who they wanted her to stone her for her sins. She was an adulteress. They wanted to stone her. And so when they brought the woman to Jesus, they were acting from their heads without incorporating or connecting their hearts. But when Jesus made a proposal to them, it got them to thinking. He had to think about it for a while, but then he said, if any of you are without sin, let him be the first, let him or her be the first to stone her. So this proposal got the people to thinking and doing an evaluation of their own behavior and their own history. I mean, that was such a powerful statement. Well, yeah, it's sort of like you can stone her if you want, but let me just, you know, pose this to you. Okay? And so often when we're judging the people in our lives, we become oblivious to the times we stumble and fell and yearn for somebody to be compassionate and forgiving of us. Okay? So Jesus is saying, instead of only focusing on what other people have done, spend some time evaluating your own life experiences and your own need for compassion, understanding, and forgiveness. And so when the people brought the woman to Jesus, Jesus took the time to say to them, well, look at yourself. And when they begin to look at themselves, it softened their hearts a little bit, allowing a little bit of, you know, love to come in and a little bit of that self-righteousness to go away. Maybe it's just me, but, you know, when you begin to look at your own stuff, you kind of go, well, yeah, I got my own stuff, so don't let me be condemning you for your stuff. And that's basically what he was saying. So if you're thinking, how can I become aware of the negative energy I may be contributing to a situation? The answer is, you already took the first step by asking the question. Whenever you ask the question, you're posing or positioning yourself to receive the answer. And the question we need to ask ourselves in all situations in our lives before passing judgment is, what is my contribution to this challenging or disturbing situation in my life? And this was the nature of Jesus' statement. Let whoever among you whose life record is flawless cast the first stone. On another note, what is so interesting about this idea of having lived your life with a flawless record, and I think this came to me watching some show and somebody said this on the show, but if you've lived your life with a flawless record, it could be an indication that you have not really lived at all. You know, all the stuff we look back on and say, oh, I wish I hadn't done that or gone through that. Maybe that gave you the insight that you needed. Does that make sense? Okay. Life is a never-ending road of infinite possible choices. Some choices produce results evaluated by your own conscience and society that you live in as being good, and some are deemed by your own conscience and the society you live in as being not good. We learn how to develop our spiritual gift of wisdom, discernment, and judgment through exploitation and experiment. You got to get out there and live. Well, we've been out there living, right? But it's to understand what these things that we experience are for us to learn from, okay? And likewise, we've also learned about, you know, we learn about things like love and compassion and caring and kindness and forgiveness through exploitation and experimentation, okay? And I think it goes without saying that none of us would want our opportunity to live life fully to be taken away from us. Want me to say it again? None of us would want it to be taken away from us to have lived life fully. So now when you talk to your children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, you can say to them, this is how you might want to look at this. And you're saying it from a point of wisdom because you have lived through that. Does that make sense? All right? So the key here is we want to always, you know, operate from a standpoint of being open and receptive to the whole possibility of what we can bring to a situation. And it's interesting to note that it is written in John 8:9 that Jesus, you know, after he had spoken to the crowd, he said, you know, those who heard what he had said began to go away at one at a time. The older ones first, until Jesus was left with only the woman standing there. Why do you think the older ones left first? Because they had developed some wisdom to understand that this thing they were asking to be done really wasn't the right thing to ask. The younger ones might have stood around for a while because they hadn't lived, you know, they hadn't really lived long enough to understand the true understanding of forgiveness and so forth. So they might sit around, but the older ones are saying, no, yeah, that means most of us in here would have left first. Okay. So, you know, another interesting point in this verse is that after everyone did a self-evaluation and left, the only one who was left was Jesus, who was probably the one who was most, you know, eligible to judge her. But this is what he said, neither do I condemn you. Okay? And yes, I do concede that in the state of mind that we're presently in, there is behavior that is right. And there is behavior that is definitely not right. All right? Let's be clear. Okay? But as we mature, we come to know that what is right and what is not right is something that is really up to the way our ego perceives things. We have this ego perception. My 19-year-old grandson, who's in college in London right now, is very much into Alan Watts. Anybody here familiar with Alan Watts? A very profound metaphysical speaker. He listens to him like other teenagers would listen to, I don't know, rap music. Okay? So he sent his father, Damon, my son, he sent his father a quote that says, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. But when the student is really ready, the teacher will disappear. Is that not powerful? All right? And so that, you know, that's the whole idea. Because then when your student is really ready, the teacher awakens within the student. And right, and that as we said in the beginning, the true self becomes more of the real self. Okay? The real self becomes more of the ideal self, you know, the transactional analysis. Real, other, ideal, and ideal other. You know, you've heard me speak about that before. Real is the real self as you think of yourself now. Other is how people perceive you. Ideal is how you're striving to be. So we're striving to move more to our spiritual self, and an ideal other is how other people will perceive you. Okay, so there's this process we're going through of making those shifts in consciousness. And, you know, and this is what Jesus was alluding to. He was asking the people, you know, that question, are you saying that you have nothing in your past for which you can be condemned and for which you should be forgiven? If you do not, then go ahead and stone this woman for what you have done, okay? And so, you know, you may want to yell out, well, no, you're wrong. You know, when a person has done something wrong, regardless of what I may have done wrong, they need to be punished. Right? Because we're not even thinking about what we did. We're only thinking about how outraged we are with what is happening out here. Okay? So we are the ego is really slick. It's externally directed. It don't want you to look in, because you might look in and go, ooh, no, maybe I better not say anything. Okay? So the key here is to understand how do I always get myself to be holistic when I'm in any experience. And yes, from our ego point of view, you know, this is a valid statement that there is right and there is wrong. There is right and wrong. Okay? But Jesus, when he was on the cross, would you say that was right or wrong? We would say it was wrong. But what did Jesus say? Forgive them, for they don't understand what they're doing. Okay? So that's sort of the key. So let me just end with this. In truth, there is only one choice. Choose righteous judgment over being judgmental. Choose peace over anger. Choose forgiveness over condemnation. Choose love over resentment. Choose patience over aggravation. Choose to turn within rather than turn without. Choose to say, I love you rather than I hate you. Choose wisely to live. Wisely choose God. Wisely choose to live in peace. And so it is. Amen.